line, Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, which today is at Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. Late puck drop tonight for the Nashville Predators, 8:15, taking on the Vancouver Canucks. And joining us now is Mitch Light of The Athletic. Mitch, always appreciate chatting with you every single week. Last week, I said, look, if Joe Milton doesn't have a good game, then there is no way Tennessee is going to win this game against Alabama. I thought it was all going to be in the hands of Joe Milton, but it looks like, in my opinion, Mitch, I thought I can put that loss on Josh Heupel. What'd you make of the Tennessee Vols and that epic collapse in the second half?
Yeah, very bizarre game. Yeah. I guess it happens a lot, but you watch the first half of that game and you're thinking, okay, Tennessee, well, they were in complete control. You're not thinking that. Like, they had to settle for field goals. And, like, there's no way Alabama's going to win this game. You know, I know it's Alabama. I know they're in Tuscaloosa. But Tennessee was controlling every aspect. It looked like the Alabama offense that we saw earlier in the year. They were limited. It's like, how are they going to get a first down? And then I actually missed the first possession in the second half. I got tied up with something at work, and I saw Alabama score quickly. And then just psychologically, it's game on after that. It's 20-13. And it just kind of shows you the mental toughness of the Alabama program. There's no panic, anywhere on that sideline from the coaches and the players. And I think it's a huge thing in college sports too. So Milton played well. I thought for the most part, especially in the first half, like I said, they had control of the offense, a couple questionable decisions there from Josh Heupel, and just kind of a missed opportunity for Alabama. Cause I don't know if we were talking about it last week. I don't know how many times you're going to go, I know Alabama was favored, but none of us really would have been surprised if Tennessee won the game the way, this Alabama team is constructed. So I don't know if you want to say missed opportunity, but there's not going to be many times, in my opinion, over the next few years where Tennessee's going to go down to Tuscaloosa and almost have even odds to win the game.
Mitch, we got 6 undefeated teams in college football right now, and obviously we got like 4 or 5 more that have only have one loss. Who's the number one team in the country? Because we saw Georgia struggle a little bit. Michigan, they have their own problems, and Willie's going to ask you that question. Good for them, too. Misery loves company. I just want to say that. I will admit it.
Tough scene for the state of Michigan.
Exactly. You look at Ohio State, good win at Penn State, but they still don't look like a dominant team. You can say that about Florida State. You can say that about Washington. Oklahoma had a scare. Based upon what you saw this past weekend, and we got some big games coming up this weekend, who do you think is the number one team?
As you were asking that question, I was kind of figuring out how I was going to defend my first Georgia, then Ohio State, then Michigan. Like, I couldn't decide. I would say Michigan right now, aside from all the other issues. And I know the schedule. I know they haven't faced really any good quarterbacks. But the complete domination, the consistent domination has been very, very impressive. Like you mentioned, Georgia has survived every game, but they have not looked good. Certain opportunities, they didn't play great against Auburn. Quite frankly, didn't play great against Vanderbilt for much of that game. I think Michigan's dominance. The one thing that I'm starting to come around this Ohio State team because of its defense. I think for the first time in the Ryan Day era, they've got a championship-level defense. They brought in Jim Knowles last year, and Knowles is, if you look at his track record, his defenses sometimes take a while to catch on. They're not – Oklahoma State, they weren't good initially, and then they got good, and they were great by the time he left. This is the second year there. So they're not as good offensively. There are no doubt about that. But if they can – they've made a big leap defensively. I think if they can pair that really good defense with just a good but not great offense, they could win a national championship. I think that's a formula for them to win a national championship.
Mitch Light is with us from The Athletic. And, Mitch, I know you've been following along with your whole team at The Athletic about the Michigan thing. I think there's probably a lot of people that are still trying to wrap their arms around it. In fact, I was watching the Ohio State-Penn State game, and Gus Johnson asked his colleague, why am I blanking on his name? He's
Joel
a very
Klatt.
Good analyst.
Joel Klatt,
who I think he's very good. Uh-huh. But Joel Klatt basically deferred and said, I'm not going to make an opinion on national TV until I hear the evidence. Well, now the evidence is coming out. It'd be one thing if one team within the league, or even two teams, was making an accusation and maybe even had a little evidence. But in reading about this, 11 teams in the conference have evidence of a very consistent pattern of behavior with this. Am I overstating this? That this is a very, very serious accusation, and I would think ineligibility for postseason is on the table here.
Yeah, I mean it's I don't want to say it's unprecedented. I just can't think of anything like this during the course of the season that so impacted the play. Like, you know, there's recruiting violations that pop up, and maybe this team got this player because they cheated back in the day, all this stuff. But, like, something very specific about something that affects the game, I can't remember, like, something like this. And I know it's a very complex issue. The way I boil it down is they gained – now, Derek might be able to chime in as someone who played the game at all levels – chime in and help us like determine how impactful it can be. But they broke very clear rules and gained a competitive advantage by doing so. You can argue whether the rule a good rule or not a good rule, but they broke rules. And I don't know if you guys have been on the air, so I don't know if you've seen this today, but there's a clip going around. Like, I think it might have been the first place in the Ohio State Michigan game last year. You can see this dude next to Jesse Minter, the Michigan defensive coordinator, looking at Ohio State signals and then signaling to the defensive coaches and all the players doing hand signals. Like, so you can say, if they figured out those signals on their own from watching game tape, that's great. That happens in all sports. But if they did it illegally, if they cheated to gain an advantage, then it's a huge deal, in my opinion. It's sort of like, you know, Jim Harbaugh got in the hot water earlier, and actually the Air Force was one of the programs in Arizona State who had kids on campus during the COVID shutdown. Like, to me, that's just a clear rule. You couldn't do it. Very few teams were doing it. And if you did it, you knew you were breaking the rule. Like, different situations here. But to me, that's kind of how I look at it. Very clear rule, and they broke it. I don't know what the penalty would be, Willie. I mean, I've thought about it. Should they be banned from the postseason? I don't think so. But we also don't have all the details here. So I think whatever happens, it's going to be fascinating because it's in the middle of the season. And as we all know, most of these NCAA investigations take forever. This one seems to be moving on very quickly for a lot of obvious reasons because it's, you know, affecting the play on the field.
The case I would make for a postseason ban and really harsh penalties is because of the intent. I'm not even that worried about whether I can prove that it gained an advantage or how many times they actually knew the play was coming before it came. To me, that's not as important as you made a decision for a calculated over years to do this to gain an advantage. And I also do not buy that Jim Harbaugh is going to sit there and say, well, that was a guy going rogue. There's just no way you can sell that on that. So to me, it starts at the top. You're responsible for that. This was something over years of time for a very distinct purpose, knowing what the rule was. It wasn't just like, oh, I didn't know you couldn't do that. Everybody knows that you can't, A, even send a guy to the other team, to the other game live, which a lot of people might find surprising, that you can't send a scout to a game live. But you can't do that, and you cannot video signals on top of that. I think people knew that you can't do that, and they did both.
Yeah, totally agree. And, I mean, I think that clip going around, I've seen some people say, well, Ohio State scored on that play, so how much of an impact? Like, I don't know. If I'm a linebacker or I'm a safety and I know a play is a run versus I know a play is a pass, that to me that gives me enormous advantage on a play and how to defend it. I think if you
– Oh, absolutely. It does. But to me, you're whether it's successful or not, that doesn't change the intent. You're intending in front of – you make a decision to cheat. You're trying to compromise and give yourself – you know is against the rules.
Well, hand signals, Mitch – and you're signaling in one personnel, and then you're signaling in the play. Like, this is what the defense is going to be, or this is what the offense is going to be. He's not videotaping or going to this game just so he maybe get a glimpse of what they're doing. No, if you start to pick up the pattern, that's why it was more than just one game. You start to pick up patterns. You start to see the plays that are ran with the signals that are being called or the defenses. Then you put it all together. Then you get – because teams typically, if I don't know you're picking up on my signals, Mitch, why am I going to change my signals? You know, if I know you're picking up, then I'm going to change it. But it seems like nobody knew. So, yes, Michigan had a clear advantage on anybody that they were playing.
Yeah, and it's just crazy that it happens. And, you know, Michigan's got a great team. They got a great roster. They're not undefeated because of this. Well, I don't think they are. But it's just, this isn't a 8-4 Michigan team where we just talk about, oh, well, it's not a big deal. This is a legit national championship team with a great quarterback, great defense. And as a quick aside, Willie, I don't know if you remember this game when we were in college, Jerry DiNardo's first year, Vanderbilt played up at Army, and I was a sports editor of the school paper, and I was up there, and Vanderbilt won like 45-10 or something, just completely dominated. And I remember talking to some of the guys in the locker room after the game, and the defensive they said, we knew all of their plays from the hit, like they on film. I think they got their hand signals or something like that. And it just, I never forget that, because I remember being on the field at the end of the game, and an Army quarterback, like, looking in his eyes when, like, he could tell that the other team knew what he was doing, and it just kind of the fear in his eyes. I thought that was kind of funny. I'll never forget that. But that was just
well, I'm going to say this. I'm going to say this, Mitch. I think they stole Michigan State signals. I think that's why they beat them.
Oh,
49ers.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think they still would have beat them, but I'm going to sit
I don't
on
think
a,
so.
I'm going to sit on the rock and say, yeah, they stole Michigan State signals. That's why they beat them 49 enough.
I'm totally with you. I got a question for you, Derek. I'm on Saturday. I'm up in my home office working, and my wife, a Michigan State grad, is downstairs watching games, and I just hear from downstairs, she's like, what are we wearing? And I flip on. So as a Michigan State, as someone who wore the green, what were your thoughts on those uniforms the other day?
Yeah, I loved them. Okay. Maybe they should have pulled them out against somebody they had a shot at beating. It would have looked a little
bit
better.
Someone who didn't have their signals, at least. Yeah.
Exactly. Somebody didn't have their signals. So there you go.
Yeah. Hey, when you lose, when you get shut out like that, I guess you got to turn to talk about the uniforms.
Yeah, you have to.
Those poor broadcasters just trying to find something to talk about just to get through 60 minutes. Mitch
exactly.
Light of The Athletic, appreciate you as always. We'll chat with you next week.
All right, take care, guys. See ya.
Awesome. Right,
yep.
Thanks, Mitch. All right, we'll chat with Clark Lee in 15 minutes. Big game for Vanderbilt coming up off of the bye. But before we get into Clark, I want to touch on one thing that we haven't been able to touch on quite yet that Mike Vrabel mentioned. And it was an absolute bomb that we haven't been able to get to because we had to deal with the first bomb that was dropped yesterday afternoon when the Titans traded away Kevin Byard. But it was Mike Vrabel's statement about the quarterbacks. Now, Mike Vrabel said that Ryan Tannehill will not practice today. Doesn't make you feel great about his availability on Sunday, but this is what Mike Vrabel had to say about the quarterbacks.
Ryan can't play. I'd expect both of them to play.
Okay, all right. That was Mike Vrabel on the quarterback situation. He would expect both Malik Willis and Will Levis to play, of course, with the asterisk of Ryan Tannehill not being good to go. Where it stands right now, from the information that we have, I wouldn't expect Ryan Tannehill to be good to go on Sunday. Thoughts on seeing both of the quarterbacks on Sunday?
I think there is no way that Tannehill is going to play. I'd be stunned. Like, they talked about him just getting out of the roller, you know, the scooter, you know, where you put your you put your ankle up, you put your knee on the scooter, and you kind of hop around there to keep all of your weight off of that. You don't go from that to walking out there. Remember last year in the days leading up to the game he returned, they had a very close camera on him practicing. He was able to move and at least make the handoffs and do the basic movements. He couldn't really run, but he was able to at least get out there and do some practice. He will not practice today at all. So that tells me he's not close to playing. So it's going to be the other two guys. So, D-Mace, your thoughts on them saying we're going to play them both?
I think they want to quickly see who's going to be their quarterback potentially moving forward. I think that's what it is. Because if you truly believe, well, Ryan's only going to miss one game, then listen, okay, we'll play one guy. And the plan is not to play both guys, but the plan is to start you, see how it goes, and then we may have to go to the next guy if it's not going well. But Vrabel makes it seem like, okay, we're playing both of them no matter what. And I think that's because he wants to find out, like, can Levis do it? Mm-hmm. Can he go out there and do the things that we asked him to? Because we believe Ryan's going to be out a little bit longer than what we probably first thought. I see this as being a multiple game, you know, absence for Ryan Tannehill. Not just Sunday, I think Thursday. And then you got to think about, okay, if those two games didn't come out the way we wanted to, again, why am I going to put a guy out there that's 70%?
I have a few thoughts on that.
You know?
One, if Tannehill's not available for multiple games, how much of that was a factor in what they want to do at the trade deadline? Because if Tannehill's out 4 to 6 weeks, and this is just speculation, I'm not reporting that. If he is,
exactly.
He is out 4 to 6 weeks, then yeah, you'd go ahead and trade because you don't feel great about your opportunity to turn the season around if your starting quarterback is out for 6 weeks. The other thing is, you know, using both quarterbacks, it's not always created equal.
Yeah.
Like, that's something that you and I talked about with TD yesterday, Willie, before you had to step out, was, is it going to be a rotation where Malik gets the first quarter, then Will Levis gets the second quarter? Yeah, right. Mm. Or is it Will Levis gets the start and Malik Willis is there in case, just in case of emergency? Is Malik Willis getting the start with an incredibly short leash? And if he makes a mistake, then Will Levis gets in there? I think that not just the idea that you could see both of them, but the strategy in the plan for both of them will be interesting to see.
Yeah, it will be. I think, you know, I think people look at it, well, you got to have a game plan for Willis and you got to have a game plan for Levis.
No,
I think you
have, to have the same game plan.
You can have the same game plan for both guys. I think people look at it because of, you know, Willis' ability to get outside the pocket, run, and you think of Levis more of a guy that sits in the pocket. No, but Levis can get outside the pocket.
He can move.
Levis can move. He's a really good runner. He can get down the field when he's not hurt. And you just assume that he's 100% now or close to it because he hadn't played. But I think the same package of plays that you can run with Willis, you can run with Levis as well, because it's not like Levis is a statue there. He can move around in the pocket. He can use his legs to extend, you know, plays. So I think you go in with the same game plan. Now, you may have a few plays that you do with Levis that you may not do with Willis, but I think as a whole, the game plan is the game plan for both guys. And you get it, you give them an opportunity to sort of go out there and orchestrate that game plan the way you hope they can in order to try to get a victory.
You mentioned a factor that I hadn't really considered, and that is you have a short week. You have the Thursday night in Pittsburgh. That's a tough turnaround. And so if you're looking at these two games and saying, let's just look at two games, not likely to have Tannehill. Let's just say that that's where their mind is, even though we don't know that. You could, when you say I'm playing both guys, it could be a little bit of a shakeout, right? Maybe, A, you say, well, Malik Willis deserves, these are all just theories in my head. I have no idea what they're thinking in there. But I might be thinking Malik Willis earned the number two job in camp, so I'll start Malik Willis. I'm going to get them both ready, but it is kind of a shakeout, right? Let's take these two games and find out. If Willis does great, then okay, let him run. And then if he's not, you have your – you'll have a moment where you can insert Levis in there, and then maybe Levis, you see who earns the start against Pittsburgh. If you're kind of in that mindset now, and it's hard not to think that they're in that mindset now that they've traded Byard, right? It's a little bit of a, let's see what we have, and both of these guys, by the end of the year, we'll have a better idea of where to go.
That's the idea, at least. That's the idea.
Rather than just say Levis is the starter.
And
which is what maybe some of us think might, like, I'd be included. I'd like to see what Levis can do. I'd like to give Levis a shot. And to do that, maybe the best way is to just give him all the reps and say he's the man. I want to give him the best chance to go. But to be fair to Malik Willis, maybe they feel like he's earned the chance to get the first crack at it.
And it very much so could be a point that you brought up, just a cop-out for Mike Vrabel so he doesn't have to say who's starting
right. So
on
the Falcons,
Tuesday.
Keep the Falcons guessing a little.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head football coach, will join us coming up next. But we've got a Predators game tonight, so let's give some of those tickets away. Be the first person to call in to 615-737-1025, and you will win a pair of tickets to see the Predators take on the Vancouver Canucks tonight at Bridgestone Arena. Puck drop at 8:15. Again, that number is 615-737-1025. Good luck with that. Clark Lee coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. We are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.